It's deja vu. This moment's happened before.
You have found the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Hello, and welcome to the Kaleidoscope Gallery. I'm your host, Paul. And alongside regular contributors, Dave, Leah, and Hans, we will be exploring an experience of the mysterious so-called energy vortices at Sedona, Arizona. The power of nature, ancient sacred sites, and their effects on our divided brain. AI-generated music and art, a useful tool or formidable rival. So let's step into the first exhibit inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
For New Age spiritual seekers in Arizona, there's a place that even the Grand Canyon can't top. It's called Sedona. Many believe this is the site of a mysterious energy field where the Earth's cosmic power lines meet and create four energy vortices. One of them, they say, is centered here at Cathedral Rock. Towering red cliffs, deep green forests, and an electric blue sky make this high mountain valley an undeniably magical place. Whether you believe in magic or not. New Agers have been coming here for decades to soak up its unique energy vibes. But they're not the first to find spiritual inspiration in this valley.
Get your psychic kicks in Arizona's trippiest desert. This is an article in the Thrillist.com. And that's a reference to Sedona, Arizona, which this article bills as a New Age Disneyland, a city of psychics, tarot readers, Reiki healers, and crystal dealers. It draws a very specific kind of tourist. Those drawn to the area for its supposed metaphysical and spiritual assets. Now, indigenous tribes have for centuries regarded the area as sacred. Now, Dave, you were just there.
Yes.
Did you experience any of the enhanced spiritual effects of the area?
I'm still digesting it. I can attest to being one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, with one of the most intense landscapes. Now, I'm mostly stuck to the country and wandering through the canyons, but I did search for the vortexes, and I visited some vortices, yeah, let's get our grammar right here. There's certain areas that are reputed to be the vortexes. Now, the one I spent the most time in is the Boynton Canyon vortex. And it was pretty magical. It's supposedly, like, some of the vortices are supposed to be female, and some are supposed to be male.
According to this article, indigenous peoples have for centuries regarded the area as sacred. It's the home of the Yavapai Apache Nation.
Right, and that's where I was staying. The Boynton Canyon is their spiritual home. The most magical place I've ever stayed. Beautiful, like everywhere you look, like words and pictures don't even do it justice. The vibes were intense, but not in a way that you'd picture intense. They were intense almost that it was like you were just in too beautiful a place to think about anything but how beautiful the place you were in was. And it was just like, wow, wow, wow.
Later on in this article, Pete Sanders is an MIT biochemical chemistry graduate who aims to connect spirituality with science. I want to bring the stuff out of woo-woo into the wow-wow, he explains. And he goes on to say that the therapeutic benefits of the vortices are directly related to the physical attributes of Sedona itself. High elevation, deep canyons, low population density, and the blue skies for miles all combine to create an optimal environment for relaxation and brain stimulation.
I mean, it's clearly a special place. Like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it's like a million landscapes jammed into a very small area, and each way you turn is a different landscape, but the landscapes somehow tie together. And it's very lush with wildlife and plants. And almost every plant is some kind of a healing plant and a fragrant plant.
You could see why it'd be considered sacred.
But it wasn't like Algonquin, which is sometimes like so beautiful, you just want to write poetry. Here it was more like you wanted to dance and sing, and it wasn't just beautiful, it was nourishing or something. Or I guess Algonquin's nourishing as well. It was like a great calm came over. You no longer saw the past or the future, the present. It's like someone came and erased your to-do list off a whiteboard and made your to-do list all about health, happiness, and love or something. But yet, while there seemed to be lots of wisdom and like weirdos playing flutes on rocks and the resort, instead of having like, you know, normal resort things, they had like, you know, go down and talk to an intuition specialist and we'll read your mind and we'll take you on a hike with a guided tour. But instead of being a naturalist, it was like a guided tour who will also tell you about how to live in the moment or some shit like that. We didn't do anything like that. We just hiked around.
That is what sacredness is. It's just powerful places on the earth that have this powerful effect on us as humans. And that is sacred and quote-unquote magical.
There's something going on there, and it's not something that any human can define. And if they say they're defining it, they probably are full of shit. But there's undeniably a magical place. And like, even in the snow, there was a beautiful warm pool, and everybody was swimming among the mountains, and it was just like a little tap of ancient wisdom.
How do we experience the world? How do we make sense of it, measure it, construct it, and understand our position in it? A controversial scientist, Ian McGilchrist, has developed a radical theory about how our brain interprets the world.
Two hemispheres have styles, takes, if you like, on the world. They see things differently, they prioritize different things, they have different values.
McGilchrist claims that the left hemisphere of the brain is gradually colonizing our experience of the world with potentially disastrous implications.
A way of thinking which is reductive, mechanistic, has taken us over. It's made us enormously powerful. It's enabled us to become wealthy. But it's also meant that we've lost the means to understand the world.
Could the problems of the modern world be influenced by an imbalance in the human brain? And what does that imply about our future? For Ian McGilchrist, the problem is not only bad politics or a warped economic system. The problem is inside our modern brain.
This professor, his name is this doctor, what's his name again?
Ian McGilchrist.
You're talking about the hemispheres of the brain, and there's something I want to clarify before we go on to exploring this interesting theory. And that is, okay, there's two hemispheres of the brain, and one way to think about them is there's the left and the right hemisphere. And the left hemisphere, you might say, is the logic side. And the right hemisphere, you might say, is the relationship side. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's a way of remembering it. Left logic, right relational. Not relationship, relational. Because, and relationship, but I mean, it can be relational to yourself and your own body. It can be to others and your environment, what's around you, that your inner and outer alignment.
So each side of the hemisphere has kind of their own roles, their own, its own specialty.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we interact with the world and we think, we process information.
And it's not unique to humans. It goes all the way back to sea anemones that are millions, hundreds of millions of years old off the Isle of Wight, according to Ian McGilchrist. So yeah, it's a strategy that is required for survival. And so the question he was asking is why?
But what I thought was interesting about what he was saying is he said that the left hemisphere is colonizing the right hemisphere. In other words, we're allowing as a species or as a culture to let that left hemisphere dominate our life and our decision-making processes.
Yes, this is where people think he's controversial, but I agree. And it's worldview-based, so...
So if the left side is the dominant side, and what is it that we're missing from the right side of the brain? What?
Meaning, connection, balance. It's like when you walk in a forest or somewhere beautiful in nature, a beach, a vista, you know, and a mountain, and you feel that awe and that connection. You feel aligned with your environment and that is right and left brain integration, and that would inform and has informed, because we have worldviews that still exist and that have existed throughout history that integrate left and right brain hemispheres and that promote balance and that use techniques. So whether it be poetry or mantras or Rumi poetry, you know, it's a puzzle. It's a series of symbols.
So you're talking about a forest, a beautiful forest. Say that your left brain might begin to think, oh, I can exploit the resources here.
Exactly. It manipulates. It's important for survival because it looks at details and it categorizes things and it counts them, you know, and we need that. But it can't run the show, right? That's what can be replaced by robots. You know, that's what AI does better for us, is our left brain stuff.
What are you?
I am a robot of the class M3, programmed to provide information and support to all Jupiter personnel.
You're speaking about the left brain, left hemisphere dominance that...
Yeah, no, I agree, and I've been thinking the same thing. I mean, he's a neurologist, he's a physician, the man knows brains. Very well, but it felt good to hear a brain spurt, you know, talk about and put together notions that I had thought about myself.
Hello, I'm Bob Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to Series 31 of The Joy of Painting. If this is your first time with us, allow me to extend a personal invitation for you to drag out your paints and your brushes and paint along with us each show. And if you've been with us before, please allow me to thank you for inviting us back for another series of painting shows.
Well, be honest, I'm a nature freak. I love to walk through the woods and talk to the animals. Don't tell anybody that. I even talk to trees at times. But you need to understand nature to appreciate the great, great things that have been created. We spend so much of our life walking around looking with never seeing. And if painting teaches you nothing else, it'll teach you to see nature, to appreciate some of the beauty that's around us every day that we take for granted.
Okay, so like if you let's say you're an artist, you're painting. There's all sorts of decisions that you have to make. You have to choose your palette. You have to even just figure out where you're going to sit down to paint. Then you have to have all this.
Is the light right? And yeah.
You have to analyze and figure out where you're going to sit down, and then you have to maybe
composition.
Sure, all these things, and maybe those are more like left brain activities.
Parts of it are, but then there's, you know, what colors actually, what scene actually, and then what does any of it mean, and how are you expressing that and embodying it into a painting?
So that's what makes perhaps great art or great works in general is where the left and the right brain are working well together. And sometimes I think people have a misperception about art or creating in general, that it's kind of like off in the clouds, or you get the messages from, you know, outer space or something, or, you know, it's very esoteric or magical.
The right brain is associated with that magical, you know, plug into, but it's pop psychology. So, you know, both hemispheres engage with everything that we do and have a role in them. Although apparently left brain is in control of speech, but language and meaning, you know, I mean, absolutely left and right brain, and right brain is the only hemisphere that can infer and implicit meaning and inferred meaning, and, you know, gesture and tone and all of those ways of understanding communication, only the right brain can understand. Left brain does not compute.
Just what are digital computers? Are they superhuman machines that can solve any kind of problem? No, not any kind. Are they man-made monsters that perform mathematical miracles in millionths of a second? No, nothing miraculous at all, nor monstrous. Are they electronic brains that can do man's thinking for him? Well, they can do some of it, and be big and quick about it, too.
You mentioned artificial intelligence a little earlier.
Yes. Left brain, like, so this is the thing. If you don't want to be replaced by ChatGPT, make sure your right brain is running the show.
That, as it were, one world is real, vibrant, unknown in part, only known ever to a degree, and ever more coming into being and ever more coming into knowledge for the right hemisphere. And for the left hemisphere, already cold, finished, known, dead, put in a book, stuffed on the shelf, filed away. And we now live so much in this virtual represented world, partly because we're very much cut off from nature, which constantly reminds you of its vivid, uncertain liveliness. It confronts you with its audacious beauty and vitality all the time, partly because we've learnt to cut our minds off from our bodies. And so we think in this enormously abstract way, and partly because of city life, partly because of technology, which means we interact with two-dimensional screens rather than the three-dimensional depth.
So earlier you mentioned, you know, walking into a beautiful scene in nature, and you and I have been fortunate enough to have seen some really interesting scenes of nature, which do seem to shift. You can feel a shift in your brain. You can feel the shift of thinking, your perspective.
No, you're right. A whole shift in just in how you feel, basically. So, and definitely right-left brain integration is going on. Yes, we've been in beautiful places like Zion National Park and the Grand Canyon.
And you're talking about feeling integrated, sense of integration with nature, I guess.
Yeah, and so much awe. And like, I mean, just a sense of perspective, as you said, shifts, because these places are so, it's like being in cathedrals in nature, you know, it's just.
Oh, so wait, we should clarify that some of these places that we were at, actually most of them, are actually considered to be sacred sites by peoples who have treated those as sacred sites for centuries and way beyond that. So these are, by some, considered sacred. So we went there. How would you reflect on that, quote unquote, feeling of sacredness? Does that check out with you?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just, it's powerful. You know, it's just, when you visit sacred places, you know when you experience them. And I mean, there's so many of them. The planet is full. You know, it doesn't, you don't have to just go to Uluru to experience a sacred place. One can experience sacred places in simple places too.
There's very strong evidence that people who spend time with the natural world benefit mentally to an extraordinary degree. I get a lot of letters from people who say that, who are recently bereaved, for example, who said that the one thing that brought them comfort was to spend time in the natural world, relaxing and looking at things that are true and important and have been like that long before we arrived and for a long time after we've gone. It's clinically now been demonstrated that doing that is actually helps in the healing process and helps to bring people happiness and confidence and relaxation. All very important things in this modern world in which we all live.
You are inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Yoga for Health, an adventure in well-being with Richard Hittleman. His dynamic yoga instruction is a journey into second youth. And now here he is, author, lecturer, instructor, Richard Hittleman.
Well, a good day to you all, friends, and a very cordial welcome once again to our Yoga for Health program. You know, friends, those of you who have just recently joined us may consider yoga to be something new or something of a novelty, but I would like you to know that in reality, yoga is the world's oldest system of physical and mental culture, in other words, of keeping fit. It's actually thousands of years old, and it has survived intact almost exactly the way we're instructing it here, because it deals with the great natural potentials of the body and mind. In other words, it deals with development. We know that within us there's great force and great power and great beauty, and the idea is to bring it out. And the yoga techniques have been so successful over the centuries that they have survived these many thousands of years, as I say, just the way we're teaching them here. So let's have a yoga exercise right now, which is going to begin to loosen you up and release some of this great trapped vital force, some of this energy that you have lying within you and that can be brought out and used if we simply give it the proper impetus, make the right movements to do so.
So we alluded to our own personal experiences with nature, being in, like, you know, because we live in a busy city, so getting out to nature and visiting these sacred sites, and we've experienced it. But what would you say? Are there other methods or ways or things to do that might help one as a person balance the two hemispheres and integrate them more?
Engage with any kind of artwork you love, you know, music, dance, poetry, novels.
What about exercise and movement?
Yeah, in nature, especially. But no, yoga. Yoga, 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 yoga. But yoga is fantabulous for not just left, right brain, but, you know, over, like, all brain. And then just embodiment generally, like aligning your whole system, including your central nervous system, which of course your brain is, you know, the king of. Once I understood the right left brain thing, it was like, oh, that helped me understand so much more about why yoga is so effective and why different poses and ways of practicing are so powerful. for your integrating, engaging, working with both hemispheres. There's different ways of doing it. You can be practicing one pose like Tadasana, where you have to just stand on your own 2 feet and be solid and lifted at the same time, grounded and lifted at the same time. Many different ways of working with the hemispheres. One can just be standing in a pose and using both halves of your body evenly, equally, properly. And then there's doing a pose like Trikonasana, so another standing pose, but the triangle pose. Many people know it if you've done any yoga. They all know. Everyone knows mountain. Everyone knows.
Is that the one you always see on like advertisements? Like it's the most often used one. It's like kind of like
That's warrior. With all of those standing poses, you do it on the right side and then you do it on the left side. So, you know, you're only doing it on one side at a time, but you always do it on both sides. And that's because you have to use both hemispheres. You're developing both hemispheres, but you're doing mirror images of actions on the opposite side. And then you have positions. So you have the first type of position where you're using both hemispheres in the same way on both sides of the body. Then you have the versions where you're doing mirror positions on opposite sides of the body. And then you have poses where different halves of your body are doing entirely different activities and where the same muscles are doing the opposite. So where one muscle might be extending, another one, the same muscle on the other side is contracting. You know, and so now your brain is balancing, having to, so these are more advanced and difficult poses, because now your brain is not mirroring or doing one side at a time. It's actually having to use each hemisphere independently and do opposing or different, vastly different actions on each side. So it engages the two hemispheres in ways that are even more, you know, intense and challenging, basically. And are working with the hemispheres of the brain in a variety of different ways.
And that sounds like something that would be good for professional athletes.
It's great for everybody, including professional. I like professional athletes, absolutely.
This is for any sport. And when you see someone do an amazing play that is not only intensely and incredibly skillful and disciplined, but it's also very creative.
Svechnikov, now Walmart. For Andrei Svechnikov again in back of the goal. He stops in a dime. Lacrosse move. Scores! What a goal! Andrei Svechnikov reaches into those bag of tricks for some magic here in the third period. A highlight reel goal.
The thinking that went into that particular play seems to be a combination of the left and the right hemisphere, and that's where you get true stardom.
People who do next level mountain biking and go on these tiny narrow trails, you know, at such speeds, and they're absolutely integrating, you know, everything, because there's just no way you would be able to achieve that without it. You know, if you were purely left brain, you'd be like, what are you doing? Get off of this crazy height, you know? Like,
it's too dangerous. Why are you doing this?
Illogic. Stop, you know? Right brain, you know, can be like, can keep you, you're aligned, you're positional, you're in the moment, you're on the spot, right? So, and left brain can get all those details and feed them to the right brain to make sure that it's keeping you properly aligned and, you know, because it's that positionality. It's not just relationship in emotions or whatever. No, it's not just emotions are left and right brain. To make music or to do a piece of art, you have to do both. To do science, you need to do both, you know, like right and left brain.
You are listening to The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
As the music industry is inundated with content, Spotify has recently taken action against bots pretending to be listeners, removing thousands of AI-generated songs in an effort to eradicate fake streams. As complaints of fraud and clutter continue to plague streaming services, Spotify has increased its policing of its platform by removing tens of thousands of songs from Boomy, an artificial intelligence music startup. Lately, the music industry has been grappling with the surge of AI-generated music, as well as the increasing volume of songs flooding streaming platforms on a daily basis. The emergence of AI has simplified this particular task, as it enables individuals to produce numerous music tracks in a matter of seconds, which can then be effortlessly uploaded and streamed online. Launched 2 years ago, Boomy provides its users with the ability to select from a variety of styles or descriptors, including but not limited to rap beats or rainy nights, in order to produce a track that is machine-generated. The music can then be released onto streaming services where the user will receive royalty payments.
It's an AI startup called Boomy. Boomy lets users create tunes in different styles, and then then you can release it to service streaming services where you can then end up getting royalties for it. And they've claimed to have generated 14.5 million songs for people who just kind of like type in something, I want a song like this, a song like that, and then release it on Spotify.
Yeah. So in other words, prompt the best, right?
14% of the world's recorded music right now is being artificially generated, or I'm sorry, I said artificially intelligently generated. I just thought that was interesting. Like, wow.
Yeah, but it's also still shit because we're obviously we're not hearing any of it.
Well, I guess that's why they needed the bots, right?
You know, I mean.
But yeah, I mean, talk about, as I say, someone, an artist who releases on Spotify through, you know, various distribution, and I've got songs on Spotify. It's kind of an interesting to think, well, there's 14 million.
Are the vocals generated as well, or is it, or what? Is it just instrumentals? Like,
we go right on the Boomy website. Unleash your creativity. Make music with Boomy AI. Create original songs in seconds, even if you've never made music before.
Sure, that like appeal to the lowest and widest demographic, and like people who aren't inclined.
How do I create a song? How do I create a song on Boomy? Oh, you just hit tapping, create, and song. Then choose a style, select any custom settings, and tap create song. Boomy will create endless number of song options for you to reject, save, or customize.
Emulate music styles. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so it's a style. What is it?
AI-powered algorithm.
I didn't see anything about vocals.
Wow, so you're thinking that that's the thing that they can't artificially generate, the vocals?
I don't know. I'm just asking. There just seems to be a lot that's not shown. And that's the problem with this new tech, is that it's like, sure, it's a Wild West. I got nothing, no problem with that. But look at these, like, what is mixing? What, how does a custom style? Like,
what is tempo?
What is this? This is like, this is cash grab shit. And I guarantee you, it's not good, you know? And this is the problem with, like, even the thing that, like, I have, because I got, like, a thing for, to get vocals in AI or whatever, like AI models of, like, famous musicians or whatever. And, the thing with this, you have to know if you're doing like, I'm going to sing this verse and I want like the Drake AI voice model on it. So you like put your vocals in, like it has to be, you have to like research, okay, what keys are Drake's songs in, and like, what is his pitch like relative to? Because if you sing it, if you sing normally in a pitch that's not congruent with your voice AI model, it's going to sound like ass. So it's like, I don't know. There's just a lot more to it than these people are kind of like insinuating, but that's just internet marketing in a nutshell. This is cash grab, garbage generation.
But to answer your question about the vocals, after tapping add vocal from a saved song, you can choose to add custom vocals, or try an experimental auto vocal, which is a beta feature.
Right, so it's saying you do yours. Custom vocals, yeah.
Or you have a beta feature. Try the beta feature, which is an odd audio. It turns a short audio phrase or sample into an algorithmic vocal line.
You can endlessly reject or save new out of vocal options, dude. What are we? I want to ask, what are we racing towards? You know, our consumption ability to consume like eventually taps out, and we're gonna have no like. There's gonna be no value to the instantaneousness of this. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's insatiable, right? So, what are we racing towards? That's what I want to know. Because what? It's like for a laugh? What's it for? Is this just for a laugh? It's like people want to think that they have a chance to like make something great because it's like they think it could be easy.
Well, we should listen to one of these AI generated songs from this website, Boomy. So I'll just pick one here.
Yeah, this is garbage.
Seriously? This is called the Chilling Out Modern Ancient Beats. What the heck? And there's 14 million of these on Spotify, Hans.
Yeah. That's chill. They create a song with hashtag chill. If that's hashtag chill, I'm like, yeah, the person, the AI made that needs to go to therapy. That is not chill. That is assault.
That was totally random. Like, we weren't cherry picking. It just...
No. There's just so much, like, as I said, with the AI voice model stuff, you have to be very conscious of, like, oh, well, this will go well with this because it's in this style, or, like, I'm saying the cadence. You have to, like, understand the cadence of what you're saying and what you're singing and the range of what you're singing in to like make these AI models actually sound good. The ones that are replicated off of already famous singers about music creation and are going into it like, okay, like what key is it in? What, and like really go in with an intentional attitude. You could really make some really good shit. It's gonna get better and better, we understand that, but the ability to craft something, to craft it well, to understand what works, you gotta put in the hours. Like, it is what it is. At its fundamentals, it's like with music, it's fundamentally very simple but extremely deceptive, and that's like with most things that, like, you know, humans enjoy. And then they're just, we're trying to find ways to like hack it so we can like achieve the idea quicker. And these things, these tools will help us, but it's allowing access, tools and chances to people, you know? And if they really want to shoot their shot, this is just another tool to help them get where they want to get.
But there's already 14.7 million of them from that Boomly site, and like there's more coming.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because if it's really good, it's gonna like get traction.
The trick here is though, Hans, is that all of these AI algorithms for like, you know, creating the virtual copy of a given artist, they're all based on that artist. There's rehashing in a sense. Like, do you really want to hear? Like, we could be hearing Drake songs for 1,000 years.
There are new models like put on that site every day for people.
But I mean, they're going to need new artists in order to have new models as time goes on. So it's always going to be led by humans, first.
Yeah, for sure. It could be the missing puzzle for certain people who are qualified in other ways, and this could be like a tipping point. That's kind of like how I see it, as you know.
We could do an interesting experiment with an interesting blend of a few artists or something. Like, you can even get creative with the models you choose.
Yeah, man, you got to do like a We Are the World type shit. The We Are the World, but just with like Andrew Tate and Joe Biden.
Kaleidoscope Gallery's my favorite podcast. Fake shit don't last. Cup of soup, shove it up your. One love, Kaleidoscope Gallery. Her name was Valerie. Her name was Valerie. Her name was Valerie. Yo, Kaleidoscope Gallery's my favorite podcast. Fake shit don't last. Cup of soup, shove it y'all. One love, Kaleidoscope Gallery. Her name was Valerie. Her name was Valerie. Her name was Valerie.
So yes, the AI music revolution is upon us.
Yeah, a revolution of sorts. This, the boomy technology and phenomenon with Spotify, I mean, it's completely unsurprising.
So as people increasingly perhaps rely on AI generative models to write music for us based on past music, past data, past artists' endeavor, do you think that eventually we might learn how to forget to make music and just rely on AI in the future? That it won't really be the pursuit of humanity anymore?
I can imagine a dystopian future in which all things that we consider art, everything that was being created is using some form of generative algorithm that is relying on past data. Therefore, people are no longer creating a new vocal sound or a new literary style or a new painting style. You're just using generative AI to go through past human endeavors. If that were to happen at that point, there would be no new ideas. There would just be iterations, mashups, you know, remixes and of existing sounds and styles and ideas. That's just what that looks like. Maybe sometimes people could combine things sufficiently interestingly that it sounds new. Part of what's so interesting all about musical or artistic movements is that they change, that someone comes out with something that just blows your mind or is just different from anything else that you've heard before, and they're bringing a fresh voice and perspective to it, and that's what's new and innovative with artwork.
So you're not concerned, really? You think that humans will always push the edge and always be the leader of AI, and AI is always going to be following behind? Or will it one day surpass our ability to innovate?
I don't know. I think what is always going to matter is that we see it as a tool. And a tool that has certain capacity, which will probably change over time. And even then, though, I would want these various tools and that we'd be creating with this more and more interesting technology that can do more and more strong AI type of functionality. I would want it to be solving problems that are pressing, not just to us as human beings, but to all of the relationships that we need to be stewards over. I want us to have a value system that cares about each other and the planet and the ecosystem and to be using all of this to really make it all flourish as much as possible.
Before we part, let me leave you with a quote from Professor Ian McGilchrist, the author of the book, The Divided Brain, which reads, "Our talent for division, for seeing the parts, is of staggering importance, second only to our capacity to transcend it in order to see the whole." We hope you have enjoyed this excursion through the Kaleidoscope Gallery, and that you'll join us again next time.
You have been listening to the many colors of the Kaleidoscope Gallery.